Today on the Bird Gang Powerlifting Podcast, Pavel Jurczynski is joining us to talk about his approaches and the secrets that led to Agata's success. The Elite is our English series where we interview world-level coaches and lifters.
Das ist schon geil.
Lass einfach so unglaublich, unglaublich spannend machen.
Aber es ist schon geil.
Einfach erzählen.
Ladies and gentlemen, bit different this week. We are here for a new episode of the Bird Gang Powerlifting Podcast. I'm here with my co-hosts, Kona and Max. And we are talking to, I'm really hyped up to say that, he's here with us from Poland, the one and only coach of the strongest person on earth, Mr. Pavel Jurczynski.
Hello.
It's really, really, really awesome that you found the time to get together with us and talk about powerlifting.
Thank you. Very nice. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure and an honor. So thank you very much.
Great to hear that. Yeah, we've got some topics prepared and we try to not to talk too much about Agata today because you're also a pretty well-decorated coach, not only with her, but in total. And we do have some questions from the community and also prepared something we want to talk to you about. Besides Agata, I didn't really get to know you as a coach so far. And I think that that's the case for Kona and Maxi as well. So we don't have a specific insight on what your training style looks like and wanted to know what had the biggest impact on your understanding of training and coaching.
So yeah, I got like three gods of coaching because one of them is actually the strength and conditioning coach. So the first name is Mike Tushier, obviously, the greatest hero of our modern powerlifting world. Due to the bring to powerlifting bulk scale or due to came up with emerging strategies would evolve in something that we all do, like dynamic RPEs. The second one is Mladen Jovanovic, which is this specific strength and conditioning coach. And Mladen came up with a lot of awesome ideas, he wasn't the founder, but he came up to use the Robert Frederick equation for the exertion load, the central and the peripheral and total stress, the exertion load that came to the biggest change in my programming, my coaching abilities. And the third one is, I think this is also not as big a surprise, is Steve DeNovi. Steve DeNovi is for me like was Louis Simmons for 80s. I think Steve is pretty, is the guy who remembers out everything. He's like knows everything. He looks for the connections that normal, typical coach or guy couldn't see. So Steve is like one of the biggest inspiration for me. All three guys are like my biggest influence for my career, for my coaching now. And as you know, I'm from Poland, so we were influenced by Eastern Soviet bloc of coaching, of power, of programming, like Shako, like Medvedev, Zatsiorsky, etc. But at some point, that Eastern school of programming wasn't enough. Because we have like, okay, the Boris Shako is like rich in volume, but it wasn't really connected. It wasn't for specific lifter. And this was the first time I connected with Mike Tushier, and the whole thing that Mike came up with was really, it blows my mind. Like, whoa, we can do it really differently. We can like, it was like doing things like in 180 degrees rotated. So I think this is the first. I'm a coach for like 12 years or some 12, maybe even longer. But I think that first big change for me was like having in my hand the reactive training manual. Mm. And what I remember from there, it's pretty outdated, right? But the thing I really remember that was really surprised to the idea that we can track volume. It is low, medium, or high just by tracking the time of how long the lifter is doing the back offs. It was, wow, kind of new, kind of fresh, kind of something different to me. And the second one was, I'm pretty data gathered guy. I like to have data. I like to gather data. I like to use data to make my programs better, to make things clearer to me or to my athlete. And the second greatest book for me, it's like two books, because it's part one and part two, is the Strength Training Manual by Mladen Jovanovic. That was the thing that changed my programming like a lot.
A crazy, very modern style. And I think most of the stuff is also what we do. I mean, the second guy, the strength and conditioning coach, is, I think it's only on Polish, or is it also?
It's from Serbian. He's from Serbian.
Ah, it's from Serbia.
Yeah. He owns the website complementarytraining.com. Maybe from there you will recognize him. And also he worked pretty close at some point with Mike Tushier. He even has the first Mike Tushier classes, like microcycle, like mesocycles. Pretty awesome stuff also. Maybe to the point where we are now are really outdated, but there is something that Mike started to do in powerlifting that was pretty unknown. It was like polarization film. And also it was like the last thing before emerging strategies. So it's pretty, pretty awesome stuff also.
So you've talked quite about your like biggest influences, but
yeah.
What is like your style of coaching? Like how would you describe your style of coaching? What is your approach when it comes to planning, when it comes to programming?
Mostly, I would like to say it's hybrid approach, because in Eastern periodization model, we do the blocks like hypertrophy blocks, accumulation block, intensity blocks, etc., etc. And I think it's rubbish. And at some point, yeah, really, because you don't know where after some block, you don't know what happened to your lifter. So I think that the closest idea that I support is from Mladen. It's like hybrid approach. So we have the big, the biggest championship or other some point that we are moving to. But there is not some structural, it's not structurized to that point due to the fact that, I don't know, maybe after 3 weeks of the new block, Agata's back will start hurting. So what now? I can't do the intensification with her due to the fact that her back is hurting. So there is not a chance to do such a block, such a plan. So I think that from the microcycle standpoint or mesocycle standpoint, we are doing the, like me and my wife, because my wife is also a coach, a pretty awesome coach. We're doing the dynamic RPE model. So we started with RPE 5, 6, etc., etc., and we are ending with RPE 8.5, 9, and something like that. Obviously, there is some changes block to block, like we do some higher reps, there are some lower reps. But the whole structure of block in Agata case, the whole structure of block for the whole year is pretty the same. But it start to change with some minor things that I want to test to test some tweaks that I want to test about her programming. Maybe it will be better, maybe it will be worse. Actually, to be honest, the last block that I do some changes was pretty bad. So we started to do the things before the last block. But yeah, the whole structure is pretty the same. And I'm big fan of underlying periodization. Like I am pretty convinced that everyone is doing the linear periodization, because week to the week, block to the block, we are ending with lifting higher weights, like more weights. It's typical. We can't. There is no such a thing to avoid it. But during the in six SBDs, it's pretty common and pretty easy to do. So we got rich in intensity days, rich intensity training days, and we have low intensity training days, rich in volume. And this is the first thing about the polarization. So, for example, the typical polarization week for Agata is in her primary day of deadlift, she is doing like three sets in ascending way for the triple, double on single. And in the, in the next day, with this sixth tarry day, in the sixth tarry day, she does like three sets of force on 55% of her deadlift max. And, you know, the technical efficiency, the, repeated bout effect. Sorry. Oh, it's kinda, And it's really well. It's really working, like, actually. And not only for Agata, like from my other lifters, this polarization thing, the tracking of monotony and strain is pretty common for me. And actually I believe that it works.
So when you use like undulating periodization, do you give every day a specific goal, or do you also mix rep ranges on different days, like doing a top set and back offs and different rep ranges and combine some goals on one day? Or do you have specific days to just accumulate volume, to just do some singles? What's your approach there?
It depends, obviously, what frequency we are, because when you have six SBDs, it's pretty common to just do, okay, this skill we'll do here. This is the repeated bout effect. This skill we will do here. This is the maximal effort, etc., etc. When I have lifters that are not so gifted with days that they can train, obviously I have to mix the things. So we can have the max effort day, let's say it, the primary day, and after that some backoffs to do in this range of 75-85% some work. And after that, some repeated bout effect, even in other days. So two or three sets at RPE 5 or lower, that will be described as a percentage. The funny thing, the former athlete from myself, from me, who we are still friends, even after he changed the coach, we talk a lot because he is coached by Hungarian, right? By Hungarian coach, pretty known, Gainsdorf. And that guy, once day, he gave Nico the big deadlift, like triple for RP 9.5, and Nico did the 300. And to lower the accession, he gave him one set for reps for like 55% or something like that. It was like 300, and after that 180. Pretty awesome. But yeah, it's like the repeated bout effect. So it most depends on the athlete, due to the fact also the primary days from my perspective are like, we can split it to two things. The first one is like we do the main set, like by fatigue sets or by ascending or something else, and that's it. The second one is that it's not only rich in intensity, but also rich in volume. And this is why, in case of Agata is doing the typical polarization. So the primary day in deadlift is only rich in intensity, but it doesn't work for her squad. So in the squad, she does the second thing. So the primary is not only rich in intensity, but also in volume. So that it's pretty in individual things.
Damn, that's a lot of information.
if you want to deep dive into it, on my Instagram, there is this highlighted story that is described as words, and this is the Agata's prep to the 2024 words. It's free to just dive in and see what we are doing here in Poland.
So people, so you know, just get on Pavel's Instagram account, follow him, and take a look at the story highlights, and you need to study the program of Agata heading to worlds.
Go on, I think it's kind of fun.
Is high frequency a common tool that you use, or is it just for splitting volume?
High frequency is kind of hard for most of the lifters due to their life.
Yeah, sure.
Things, the normal things that we do in life. So till yesterday, I have two female lifters that do six SBDs, six workouts, with squat, bench, and deadlift on every of it. Now I've got three, but all of them are females, and they are pretty, let's say, pretty devoted.
Yeah.
Devoted to it. So they are changing everything in life just to do powerlifting. And one is Agata. The second one just give me from the six, we did the first SBDs, six SBD sessions program for 5 weeks, I believe. And she gave me 30 kilos PR in total. So pretty awesome. And we will see the third one, how it will end. But I strongly believe that we will have also really good progress from it.
That sounds insane to me. And I'm also pretty devoted to powerlifting. I mean, as a heavyweight, it's not that easy to do six SBDs in a week, but
to be devoted
to be yeah. as well. I'm thinking of doing six SBDs in a week. Is it like doing the main movement, like doing comp squat, comp bench, comp deadlift, or are you making use of different variations on the days?
Yeah.
And what would that be and why?
Sure.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, it's not like the competition version of lifts. I think it would be like a suicide.
Yeah.
due to the fact that everyone has different leverages. So if we will do only competition version of lifts, I think that some part of the lift would be undertrained and some part of the lift would be overtrained. And for example, the second most important training for Agata for deadlift is the secondary lift, and it is on Wednesday, and it is bottom pauser deadlift. And we are doing it pretty hard. It's like the hardest deadlift in her program besides the primary day. And without it, Agata is not having this awesome position, this awesome technique, flawless that she has. Because obviously, you know, her deadlift looks awesome in most cases. But without that session, deadlift looks kind of like she would not know what she is doing. It's like it's not so good, not so smooth. So for your question. Usually it's the secondary or some part that the secondary for everyone in my, even if somebody has only 2 days microcycle, like primary, secondary days of deadlift, the secondary deadlift usually is something specific development exercise. It's like bottom pause. It's like some tempo, touch and go, even something that will work with our client, our athlete. If I have to say what exercise from the specific development I give the most, it would be bottom pause deadlift and bottom pause low bar squat. Due to the fact that I strongly believe that the lifts are the heaviest and the toughest on the bottom of the lift, especially only in rope powerlifting. Like in equipped, it's a different thing, but we are not talking about equipped.
But you're also coaching equipped, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
All of us are lacking like coaching experience in equipped so far. So
you know, it's a different sport, really. It's like for example, it's like jumping high and jumping up with this long stick.
Yeah,
like it's one second is like a jumping, but it's whole different sport, and this is like also that's the equipped lifting, the equipped powerlifting and rope powerlifting, and there is some things that you have to have in mind when you are coaching equipped, like humidity, like body weight, especially when you have really small lifter like 52 kilos. 500 grams less on the weight, and you can have really shitty sessions due to the fact that the equip is not working properly, especially in shirt. The shirt is really, really vulnerable for that thing. So it's kind of different sport, really.
But it sounds insane to me to deadlift like 6 times a week. How do you manage the sessions in between? Are you using like RDLs or tiny variations or super lightweight?
Super lightweight, mostly, really. And the funny thing is, I don't know if you are familiar with what said about 6SBDs Joe DeFranco, Joey Flex. And I don't agree with him. I think that primary is like our competition lift in his most most heavy version. The secondary and the try should be, from my standpoint, some specific development exercises. Like, let's say for the skill, it would be bottom pause deadly full caster sets, and for the try, let's say it would be some touch and go deadlift or something else. And the fifth RA, sixth RA, fourth RA, this light sessions should be the competition version.
Mm.
Do the technical efficiency, just do the repeated boat effect, but on really, really small weight, like 60%, 65%, up to 70%, no more. So I just programmed the percentages for my lifter, because if I would program the give me 3 triples on RPE3, what the hell is that? who can recognize the 3 RPE, right?
And funny enough, they would be stronger 10 kilos every week and suddenly overshoot maybe.
Yeah.
But what range of frequency do you program on every lift for different persons? What would you say is the common way to go?
For my super heavyweight, or just super heavy, not super heavyweight, but the guys who are weights about 110, 120 or more, I have a guy that we are do the specific deadlifts, like competition deadlifts, and heavyish way, let's say it. So it's like a single for RPE 7-8 and with some backoffs. Backoffs are 102 for some triple due to the big exertion that deadlift caused to him. And we do this session of deadlifts every 2 weeks. And it's changed. I change it with the Romanian deadlifts for like 3 sets of 12 or 10s in the light week, let's say. Usually 3 benches per microcycle, 2 squats per microcycle, 1 deadlift or 2 deadlifts per microcycle. And this is for the guys. For the women, 4 benches or 5. Yeah, 4 is more often. 3 squats and 2 deadlifts. This is like typical stuff.
So talking about the frequencies right now, and is it like normal for you to program SPD days for athletes, or is it just for the women, or do you split it up, or is it, let's say, yeah, an athlete is running an SPD day for like once a week at least?
During that days now, almost every one that I coached has almost has the at least one SBD. Mm-hmm. It's not like the if he had SBD, it should be all the lifts are primary. So I can do the SBD, but we have primary squat, tetrary bench, and secondary deadlifts to mix things up.
Yeah.
Because not everyone are progressing from the primary SBD. Sometimes the squat is, or sometimes deadlift is pretty shitty due to the this programming. To it's the program is to exerting for deadlifts after the squat and bench. So I would say that one SBD is typical. That SBD twice is something that we are talking with lifter. Yeah, like, okay, are you ready? Are you feeling ready to do the second SBD? Like, let's do this heavy squat, volume deadlift, and let's say some technical bench. You think you will manage to do that? And of course, I am the data gatherer. So after the mesocycle, we are looking for the estimated one rep max, proximity to one rep max to have the idea what was the momentum of the whole mesocycle, et cetera. So I know how lifter felt after the mesocycle and what data says. It was the good idea or it was the bad idea?
So I'm pretty sure we're going to talk about like accessory programming and everything a bit later on. But on like SPD days, do you plan any like accessory stuff after the SPD lift, or is it just doing the SPD lifts and get out of the gym?
Depends on if we have the whole SPD is like a primary day, the whole lifts are primary. So after that, only maybe something for some back, so like easy seated rows or something for the hips flex or something for the lifter's core. Like one accessory at most, maybe some got some lifters who are just after the last deadlift are like going home. In case of mixed SBD, like not whole training day is primary SBD, it's like maybe even there are three accessories. Some one, let's say that is special preparatory exercises. It's like multi-joint movement. And after that, there are two that are single joints, like biceps, triceps, some extensions, some flexions, etc. Something not generating exertion.
And last thing about the SPD days, do you do them intentionally that they have an effect on their own, or is it just out of necessity from having so much frequency in all lifts?
I think both, due to the fact that I had a lifter when we do with him the traditional split, it was upper lower. So we had the lower days when he just the secondary, when he got secondary squat, primary deadlift, the second lower day was the opposite, and the 2 days of bench. And during the competition in 2023, I believe, after the third bench, he was so tired, so exhausted that he ended with the opener on deadlift. And after that, I'm totally fried, man. I can't do it. So, okay, you should and you will do the SBD because your specificity and your capacity for big lifts for 9 attempts is none. So it can be like that. And I forced him to do it. And after that, we got 85 kilos of progress. So it ends pretty well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, thank you.
But this was just including like the bench on the lower body days. But do you typically program like squat and deadlift together on one day? Because I think that's for us the main essence of an SPD day. We are trying to separate deadlift and squat as good as we can. But it sounds like you are more trying to get them together on a day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. In Poland, we have that tradition. I don't know from where and why, but we a lot did things like if we have the four-day split, we would like to do the lifts like squat, deadlift, the bench separately. Once again, squat, deadlift, and bench separately. So it's like the lower upper. I started also with some of the lifters that weren't really tolerate that kind of split. I also did the push pull. So I connected the squat to the bench press and deadlift session was separate. And it also went pretty well. But now I think that avoiding the stress or avoiding the exertion from the squat to have a better performance on deadlift is counterproductive due to the fact that you will not skip it. You will have it on your competition day. So I think it's counterproductive. It's there are better options, maybe like that.
I do have a question from the community and try to translate it as good as I can. Are there any reasons or types of solutions to the situation when a lift is weaker compared to the other lifts? Like, example, bench is in relation to squat and deadlift extremely weak. How do you tackle that issue? And what can be reasons for that?
The first thing is anthropometric, so leverages. Maybe it should be like that. Let's take a look at Mr. Enahoro, who is squatting like 280 and deadlift almost 400. Maybe there is no solution. From the programming standpoint, I think that there are two ways. Sometimes it's good to do more volume for the particular lift. And
for the lacking,
yeah, like if we struggle with squat, let's do some more volume on squat and look what happened. In opposite side, there's sometimes the need of reduce the volume for the squat. Maybe there are some lifters who are not tolerate very well volume for the lift itself. Mladen Jovanovic got an idea of autoregulation of volume. So it looked like that you have the main set, like let's say the triple for LP7. You are calculating the back-off for working set for the lifter. Let's say we are doing the triple that is 10% lower than our main set. And we are given the task for our lifter. Stop doing the sets till you reach the, let's say, RP7. So if we got 200 for the triple of RP7, after that our lifter is doing 180 for triples, the first set, let's say, it will be RP5, the second set will be RP5.5, the third set, let's say, it will be 6.5, and the fourth set will be RP7. And after that, our session of the squat is done. We incorporated that to our programming sessions. And after some period of time, it was very clear that one of my 52 female lifters was undertrained. Because I gave her like, okay, some typical numbers, one back-offs and let's say 5 sets of triple for the back-offs. And was not enough for her because she started to progress when doing the volume autoregulation that things are good when she is doing one main set and 10 triples for the back-offs.
10 triples. Holy shit.
And from the other perspective, I have the super heavyweight lifter who did like for squat session, like one triple on one double for LP7. And after that, three back offs, three triples. And after including the autoregulation volume, he ended with one main set and one back off. And after that, the squat starts to rise. So it's highly individual. And I strongly recommend to this autoregulation of volume is, I think, it's in Mladen Jovanovic book is called fatigue percentage. And I strongly recommend to search for it because it's one of the things that really, really change our programming structure, and it make things easier and quicker after all, because there are some cons for this method. Like Agata is doing it all the time till the time we started to work with each other, but it was pretty shitty idea to do it during the peak, because during the peak some of the volume should be reduced. And there was a time before the Malta, before 223 watts, there was a time that I leave the autoregulation of volume, and the secondary day of her squat or deadlift, I believe, she did a ton of series, like 8 or 9 sets, and it didn't end very well for her low back, because she started pretty, the competition wasn't bad. She ended with PRs, she ended second after Kalina, but just before the flight, her back was still hurting. So it's kind of, you know, this volume autoregulation allows you to know your lifter better in shorter time than usual, but also it can hurt him.
So you gave a percentage fixed weight for the back offs,
yeah,
and then you kept the set number by the RPE when the RPE is reached.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're more following the fatigue patterns of the athlete instead of trying to push capacities that are not there.
Yes, exactly. It's pretty connected to the you can do with volume based training with the Vitruv or every other velocity equipment, because there is like the velocity drop, and after this velocity drop, let's say that from the first rep of that given set to the last rep, if you have 20% of volume drop, okay, we are done. This is the all the volume that you should do for this session. This is the pretty similar idea.
Yeah, makes sense. And the evidence says that when you're too fatigued, it's not a good stimulus for strength training.
Yeah.
So it would make sense to keep it that way.
Yeah, the cost for the benefit in this case that you already said is not responding well. It's not good.
Talk about the accessory programming again. Mm-hmm. How important is bodybuilding training for you? Like, do you care about good bodybuilding reps, or just want to get movement in specific movement patterns? Like, how important is a structured, I wouldn't call it bodybuilding plan, but you know exactly what I mean.
Yeah, just like some power building thing.
Let's call it power building.
Some hypertrophy work. Yeah,
exactly.
It's pretty important. Sorry. but funny thing. After the second woman that she received her program of 6 SBDs, she started to be really, really big. Her thighs, her butt, her arms start to being bigger from the powerlifting things. And it was really surprising to me, because I'm really, really the guy who gave maybe not a lot, but 2 or 3 accessories, or one if we got this hard SBD session, is pretty common. And mostly rows, pull-ups, some vertical pushes, some work for depends on lifter, of course, but for quads, for adductors, for hemis. It's pretty common. And it's like most of them are like 8 reps, 10 reps, 12 reps. And also, due to the Eastern Soviet periodization, I also strongly believe in this Zatsiorsky adaptation case or rule. Zatsiorsky said that after every 4 to 6 weeks, you need to change your program. You need to change your accessories due to the adaptation syndrome. So after some period of time, you will not have such a benefit from it. And it was kind of hard for me because I'm really good at tracking the squat, bench, and deadlifts. I got whole macros for it. I got whole sheets for it. But I'm not very good at tracking like accessories. Maybe I've got some idea that amount of rows or some back work for that month or that period of time, but that's it. And after that, Steve said something on Powerlifting Now, something like, there is no need for changing the program a lot. It's like, yeah, you can talk with your lifter, change some of the accessories for the, let's say, pretty similar one, and leave the rest, because obviously it's working. If your athlete is progressing, it's working. And for me, it was really important due to the chaotic style. If you are changing every 6 weeks your accessories, your environment is pretty chaotic. So I really don't, I'm not 100% sure that things that are we doing with our competition or specific development exercises are working due to the changing of accessories. So yeah, I do give a lot of accessories, but if I have some structure of where are specific accessories in my method for particular mesocycle, in the next mesocycle they will be also in the same position, let's say, in the same pattern.
So it's just like the movement pattern pretty much stays the same, but you just do some minor changes to exercises.
Yeah, except only if we had some issues with pain or some injuries. So after our assessment, visual, like we got the Valt Dynamo for the muscle strength and for the range of motion of joint and the movement that joint can do. And after that, we can change the accessories to the lifter's needs. And of course, obviously, if things are getting worse, we got the feedback from physiotherapist. So after that, we are changing the accessories. But if things are well, why we should change it? Yeah.
But what did you call it? Valdena mode? Or was it just
Valt Dynamo? It's like the equipment from Valt Dynamics. It's a company from Australia. It's like Dynamo, so it can measure the strength in isometric way, of course, of all of the desired muscles, and also it can be attached to the wrist, and we can check the internal external rotation, the flexion and extension of shoulder, etc. So we do some basic assessment of our newer and older lifter if something is getting wrong.
It's more like a rehab prehab tool to check for your athlete, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly. Something to assess the rehab or prehab protocols and exercises.
Cool.
Thank you for going so deep. I love that kind of programming deep dive.
Happy to share with it.
And I think everybody listening will be totally enjoying it. So much insight is crazy. I'm not reacting so much or give my thoughts because I want to hear from you. But it's so interesting that most of the stuff we do the same. I think high frequency is really interesting.
Firstly, the idea of 6 SBDs, I had it. Agata had it from some Canadian lifter hearing the King of the Lifts, I think, podcast. And some Canadian guy said that I'm doing 6 SBD. And she was like, holy shit, I wanted to. During 2022, from March to June, she started to doing 6 SBDs, and she had like 85 kilos of progress. So awesome amount. But after that, she got this issues with adductor, with low back pain, etc. And after that, we started to work with each other. But till the Sheffield 223, I only gave her accessories and wrapped her knees to the equipped, like World Games, like equipped Euros, etc., etc. After Sheffield 223, when the let's face it, it was pretty shitty competition for Agata. I started to fully coach her, like, okay, let's give me the steering wheel. Let's try to, I will try to program her and we'll see what happened. Till the Sheffield 224, she had like, 4 squats and 3 deadlifts, I believe, or the opposite, something like that. After Sheffield 224, she started to, kicking me to, let's do 6 SBDs once again. It was awesome. Let's do it. Pavel, let's do it. And I was, okay, let's do it. I think it wouldn't work due to the fact that I started to deep dive in this strength and conditioning stuff. Because in powerlifting, there wasn't such a thing like polarization. What the fuck is it? After that, after when I was taught to how to polarize training properly, I think we will manage to do it without any issues and end up pretty well. That I'm pretty convinced that it's really good method to that I give it to the other lifters. I'm pretty curious if there will be the day that one of the male will have the 6 SBDs. I know that Bakalund is doing 6 SBDs.
Ah, crazy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I mean, he's a light lifter as well, so
yeah. But pretty awesome, and he was pretty awesome equipped lifter also. So yeah. He defeated during the last words in equip for him, he defeated Jarek Oleg. So undoubtedly one of the, beside Agata, it's one of the biggest powerlifting names in Poland. Jarosław Oleg was 19 times world champion in 74 and before that in 75 in equip. 19 times. Undefeatable.
That's insane. And Bakalung did it.
Yeah, Bakalung did it. That's crazy. In Stavanger, in Norway.
I think for some like bench, it's pretty common to do higher frequency. And we also dive deep into Japanese bench pressing, where it's common to do active rest days, where they do 3 sets of 10 with very light weight.
Yeah.
Crazy that this will work on deadlift. And I mean, squat, I also could see like 3 times, but up to like 5-6 times squatting. Sounds crazy to me.
Yeah.
But the weightlifters also do it.
I'm so happy Maxi isn't self-coached anymore. Otherwise, we would see 6 days.
Yeah. We would see next week Maxi squatting 6 times a week. Yeah. I mean, we were pretty biased so far regarding the deadlift and squat in our programming. And for me, it was impossible to program 6 squat sessions a week. I mean, we still do a lot of leg work in terms of extensions or leg press or belt squat and stuff. But I thought that would be a little bit more easier to regulate the intensity on machine training than it is on squat, because the impact on the whole system is just that high that it's hard to predict how it recovers. But I will be open to try it out on my lifters as well. And let's see who will be the victim next week too.
But you did 3 times deadlifting, for example, with Isa, didn't you?
3 times at least, yeah, true.
And the problem was back pain.
Yeah, that was the point. I mean, we did a lot of high intensity stuff moving towards Worlds and also Europeans this year. And the price we paid was back pain, and we're still struggling with that.
Yeah.
I mean, it got better, but still working on it. And cut the main movers of squat and deadlifts out for a whole block, and now trying to reintegrate it again.
Yeah.
And we also need to talk about Agata for the people who are listening to the podcast. I mean, you know how it's going. And you already told us so much about her training, and I tried to scan our sheet to what question we can ask you that sure. You haven't already answered. So you and Agata are working a lot with the sinking technique on bench press.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not doing the soft touch. How did that emerge? When did you decide to use the sink touch, and what impact did it have on your programming? Did it have an impact at all? And what things just kept working, or what needed to be changed?
First of all, we were forced to do it because Agata loves the soft touch. She was pretty stronger in it during that time. But in end of 2022, the rules changed for the bench press. The elbow rule just came up. And the Sheffield 223 was the first competition that this regulation started to being used. And as I previously mentioned during the break, the preparation for Sheffield 223 due to the low back pain wasn't very good. We were pretty convinced that it wouldn't be the best performance, and it would be pretty low performance for Agata, for her, yeah, let's say possibilities, sorry. But we were pretty, pretty convinced that she will bring to home the 5,000 euros due to the fact that we will start with the bench press record. Yeah, world bench press record. And after the first lift, it's N21 red lighted due to the fact that her elbows were not deep enough. The second lift, Agata sinked a lot of the barbell, but it was too heavy to it. And the third one, I think it's like at the border to the good lift, it wasn't very, very high. And for the third lift, the crowd was so freaking loud, so freaking noisy, that the main judge was forced to go up from her chair and just shout the start comment to Agata to her ear. It was that noisy.
Crazy.
And I think that the crowd decided that this is the good lift, and all three judges were okay, they will tear us apart. We will not.
So they peer pressured him to white-light it.
Yeah. We will tear apart us if we will not good light it. So, but after that, we focus on like long pauses on the chest, like on Larsen presses, everything that is improving the first part of the bench press and the for the pauses. Because if pause was longer a little bit, Agata started to struggle with it a bit more. So this is the main things. So primary bench was typically one CT bench. The secondary lift was three CT bench, and the tertiary lift was Larsen press, something like that. And it ends pretty well during Malta, during the Worlds. There was no issue with Agata's lifts.
I think I remember she said she didn't struggle too much to switch to sinking. She doesn't have too much to change from her technique.
Yeah. We didn't touch technique a lot because we started to think about, okay, maybe you can flare your elbows a little bit more, but it started to feeling painful for her arms, for her shoulders. So it wasn't a very good way. So we thought that the sinking is the only way to make her lift to be good.
And do you still some accessories or other movements with soft touch?
Nope.
I saw you doing like photo press, but maybe this was an old post.
Photo press is tricky. My main reason to do photo press is the higher weight in your hands. So the nervous system is like
getting used to higher weights.
Thank you. Exactly. Getting used to higher weights. After that, spotter press is pretty good exercise for chest muscles. So it's not like the full ROM should be do the work, but also if chest muscles are stronger. So did the free CT bench press should use it. Same thing with the pin press. Pin press, I think that due to the disconnect of the concentric eccentric phase, it also maintained a good position and good let's say, RFD of the bottom portion of the lift, because nervous system should use a lot of motor units of the chest, of the long held tricep, etc. So yeah, there are three lifts that I like for secondary day. It's spoto press, it's like pin press or long paused. So like 3 seconds on the chest. This is like the common way. And to be honest, Agata's program for bench press doesn't change much till Malta. So for the year and a half, we are doing pretty the same. This is the same working strategy, training template strategy. Like there is secondary, there is tertiary, etc., etc. And even the volume of the specific workouts is pretty the same.
So I was stalking Agata's story today, and I saw she did her secondary SPD.
Yep.
And you mentioned the pin press, like the pin bench already. What's your intent with the pin press for her? When I watched the story, she's like dumping it pretty hard on the pins. I think most people, when they're doing pin press, it's like a really soft touch on the pins, trying to stay very silent, just let it down very slow. What's your intent with the pin press for her?
It will be the cutting the accession portion of the lift to the concentric portion of the lift.
Okay.
And the second one is Agata started to struggle for some reason. Maybe pin press is not the whole story that is correcting that, but on the higher weights, she struggled to do the good positioning on her chest during the descent. So there was sets or there was reps where the second rep was not good was not descend good enough. So she struggled to just press it correctly. And I strongly believe that due to this fact that the bar stays for some amount of time on the safety racks, she is forced to do the descending part of the lift properly, because from the dead stop, if it not descend properly, it will be pretty hard or unable to do.
So interesting to see why exercises are used in general and then to like a specific person. Like, I mean, there's so many ways to use a pin press.
Yeah.
But the way you use it right now is so specific. But that's also like the interesting and the good thing about it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's very exciting to see that.
Yeah, funny thing about Agata's bench press, I strongly believe, I'm almost 100% sure that Agata's bench press start to increases when we added the lock press and lock clean to her training routine. Like the strongman one. Like the
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, he's a strongman in this year.
That's what I thought as well. Because we're lucky enough to have some strongman equipment in our gym. And I've seen, maybe could have been coincidence, I don't know. But some of the good lock presses in strongman are incredibly good bench presses as well. I mean, looking at Eddie Hall, Gidrunas Zaviskas, those are insanely strong presses. And that's pretty interesting. Maybe we should talk about lock press sometime. But
wait. Before we go into another question, what do you think is the impact of a lock press? I mean,
yeah,
it's kind of the same, maybe like an overhead press, but
not exactly, my friend. Not exactly, because a lock clean is like a lot of working on your thoracic spine, or your thoracic extensors of your spine are doing a lot of stuff, and your scapula during the last portion of the lift is posteriorly tilt. So your serratus anterior and your lower trapezius are doing a lot of work. And due to that fact, I think that this can help her to do higher and more stable bridge or just position on the bench press. And her scapula is pretty stable. So all the descending and ascending part of the lift look really stable, look really clean. And I think this is due to the fact that we are doing lock, clean and press, especially clean, not just like, you know, the Yeah, like prone Y raises and some other things like that. It's like those movements, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think this is not the quality movement for lift like that. It's on the Y raises we can Y raise. Sorry.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
And Y raises we can take like 3 kilos dumbbells, 5 kilos dumbbells, and if someone is benching 160 kilos, the 3 kilo dumbbells, it's not enough stimulus to fulfill the whole conception of the structural balance, etc., something like that.
So it's not about the arm strength and the shoulder strength, it's more about the positioning and stabilizing of the ribcage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really connect the lock, clean and press with her, with strength of her delt that can be helpful to doing the stronger bench. I think that this thoracic extension and this quality of scapular movement is quite more important.
And where in your program do you put the lock clean mainly? Is it like a primer? Do you do it as a warm-up type of movement in a specific bench session, or is it just a different training exercise itself on another day?
It's different training exercise, and now the lock clean is during the 6th-year SBD, so it's the second day of her program after the primary SBD, and the lock press is, I believe, on Friday after the tertiary squat, 4th-year deadlift and tetrary bench press, something like that. So yeah, it's pretty common if we have lower in intense in volume, just pretty easy SBD, I will do more accessories over there, more compound movements, something like that.
Yeah, we are also using like pull downs for priming the thoracic extension and positioning exercises. But it's interesting.
Yeah.
So Kona Falk, I cut it you off. Sorry.
I just wanted to say Maxi's gonna order a log lift for his home gym.
Yeah, I'm already on eBay. Yeah.
It's pretty awesome idea.
Just imagine
for my 2x2 home gym here.
Yeah. I mean in the Berlin Strength, do they still have the log?
Oh, I don't think so, but I mean I did one time log press. And I underestimate that you are not like juggling a small weight, but I almost broke my nose and broke my glasses when I just balance it.
Yeah. Still the community question, which is more biographical about Agata's life. Maybe we should ask her herself, but maybe you can answer it as well. The question was, how does Agata's private life look next to the sport, if it exists at all? Like, does she have a private life next to powerlifting, or is it just Agata is just powerlifting all day?
She's besides the powerlifting part of her life, she's a pretty normal woman. She got a boyfriend, they live together, both of them are really good powerlifting, because Grzesiek is also really awesome lifter. As you know or not, Agata is powerlifting for life. She is just living from powerlifting, from the cash prizes, from like Girl Power, from Sheffield, from Arnold. She got also, I believe, from her club, from Chorzów, from the city, from the some money. And it's usually like that. That I training till from the 12 a.m. from the noon, right? Yeah, from the noon till she will end. So like for the 4-5 p.m. After that, I do some walks, because Agata is doing like 12,000 steps daily for her hips, for her general health, like for heart, eating stuff. She's a big fan of anime and manga, so this is the big part of her life.
Nice.
Also big fan of Linkin Park, so we are strongly think about that after the words in Germany, in Chemnitz, right?
Chemnitz, right, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, we will go to Hradec Králové on the Linkin Park concert.
Nice.
And Yeah, pretty much the day to day are pretty typical. After she drinks alcohol, if you are curious, but it happens like 2 times a year after some big events, like after Sheffield, she got pretty drunk. It was pretty awesome. Pretty funny.
Yeah. So she's a professional powerlifter, pretty much, so to say. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. First, I think the first one in our country. But she got lucky with Grzegorz that they managed to found each other, because he also is like the really, really dedicated to powerlifting and dedicated to her. They are really supportive for each other, which really, really helps to be at that level for Grzegorz and for Agata, because I am pretty convinced that Grzegorz in 2025 will do the 1,000 kilos or above in 125 division.
Yeah, crazy.
That's quite some weight.
Yeah.
For anybody that heard this podcast and also want to increase the frequency, train like Agata 6 times a week, bench squat and deadlift. What would be your tips when you want to start increase the frequency, but stay healthy? What would be an advice for additional recovery on programming? Should they add very small amount on the additional days, or should they split up the existing volume? What would be your advice?
At first, I would split up the existing volume. Like, let's say that if our primary day is some ascending set or fatigue sets or whatever, and after that we have some backoffs, I would split it to primary day. Let's say this is only the fatigue sets, only this heavy stuff. And the day after, I would do the only backoffs or even something pretty lighter. I think that the easiest way to not fuck it up, sorry, for the language.
Absolutely fine.
Is just to tracking the whole volume of the microcycle. So let's say that we have like frequency of bench press of 3 times per week, and we do like 60 lifts. So if we add the fourth session of the bench press, I would say that I would increase volume, and I think it would be safe without any issues for like about 5% for a start.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that we will split the whole volume on the, we got 60 lifts on the previous program, which consists three benches. On 4 benches, we will do like 65, let's say, something like that.
Sorry, you said 60.
60 reps. I'm sorry. This is also from the Eastern periodization.
Oh, okay.
I am used to, and I do it for like forever. The main volume metric are number of lifts. This is the typical Soviet Union thing.
And this is then reps.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. From the working sets. Yeah.
So you don't count super light 55% by 10 reps?
Not for the warm up. After that, of course, yeah.
Ah, okay.
If I got really light session, it counts, but not from the warm up standpoint.
And what would be a typical ballpark for like bench, deadlift, and squat for your unit of reps?
Tough question.
Or maybe sets if it's easier for you to count.
No, reps are easy. I don't count sets. Uh-huh. So I think for most of our lifters, it's typical to do like 80 reps per week for bench, like 60 reps or 50 reps for squat, and like a 40 or 30 reps for deadlift. But you know, it's hard to just talk about everyone, because, for example, Agata is doing 200 reps for bench press. She did... last week she did 110 reps in deadlift. So in opposite, that guy that I talked about, he did 15 reps in deadlift. So there is no good answer. It's like really broadly a spectrum of volume.
But that's interesting. And I think it depends on the intensity for each rep.
Yeah, of course, of course.
I think we've got a lot of information today, and that's just awesome. So I'm really hyped up to hear the episode when it came out later to process everything and write it down again. So I've made some, I wrote a lot of things down and try to think about it again. But we've got just one question left, which is maybe a little bit easier to answer. What's your proudest moment as a coach so far?
So far, I think it's easy question. And the answer is pretty obvious. Sheffield 224. And when Agata raised that 220 kilo weighted big statue, it was even more satisfying and more wzruszające, moving for me than hearing to our national anthem on words. Like winning the Sheffield was something spectacular. And I really, really, really hope that we will achieve that again during Sheffield 225. And my biggest dream as a coach is to train someone who will maybe not win, but who will also will be qualified for Sheffield. If I will train something to that level, I will be satisfied as a coach. And I think, I hope really that it will happen during the next 5 years. Let's pray for that.
Sounds awesome. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you
for being here and giving us all the information you did. I'm giving the last words to Mr. Konan Novak, who's got something to say.
Nothing too specific, but of course, if you liked this episode, please drop the 5 stars into the Spotify rating. Share it online, share it on Instagram, on wherever you want. I hope we'll see us in the next episode as well. Thank you, Pavel, for your time. It was such a pleasure and it was quite some fun, a whole bunch of information. I think we can all agree on that. We can just sit down now and just think about what happened during the last 2 hours here.
What we did wrong.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for having me. It was big a pleasure and really, really enjoyed it. So maybe another next time.